Order, welcome to the Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism Committee meeting, and the roll call will be short. It's Representative Herron and myself, Representative Hughes. And thank you to those here that are assisting us today. We appreciate it very much. And we have Representative Gaddis and Representative Higgins joining us. And we will get started because we have an important topic and a statewide link to economic certainty. And it is with us today. We have Don Dyer, who is with the Matsu Borough, the Economic Development Director. And also we're happy to see Mayor Larry DeVilbiss is here from the Matsu Borough as well to talk to us about how this is not just a Matsu Borough project, but it's actually a statewide project. And so we'll let them get going because I don't want to scare anyone, but I heard there were 120 slides. We doubt that we'll have time. In fact, I will need to leave by 12:30. I'm not sure where the Juno Bone and Joint Center is, but at least by 12:30. So we will need a, it's by the hospital, right? Okay, so then by 12:30 we'll need to be finished. So go ahead, gentlemen, introduce yourselves for the record, and let's
thank you, and thanks, Representative Hughes, for inviting us to make this presentation. You're going to see an amazing story unfold. It's one that actually this year we're celebrating our 50th year as a borough, as of January 1st. March 15th, in a couple of weeks, we'll be celebrating the 100th year of the first 900-ton export of coal from the borough. We're not going that far back, though. I'm going to introduce our economic director, Don Dyer, and let him walk through the unfolding miracles that are happening out at Point McKenzie, and it's something that we hear new things about almost every day. Just a couple of days ago, we learned that the state forestry is right now brushing the new road across the Little Susitna into a state forestry project, but that opens up another town site and an ag project for us. So probably brush over that a little bit later. Don, go ahead, and we'll kind of wing our way through this.
Well, thank you for inviting us to come and tell you the story that we see developing there in the Matsu Borough and the Port McKenzie area especially. And out of respect for the time that you need to make your appointment, I'm going to skip a few slides, and I'll just expedite right through it. I think you may have seen this quote before in other presentations since you're local to us, but for the benefit of the others, John Schutz there is a site selector. He is RSH Group is a spinoff of Arthur Anderson Company and their site selection group that they had. And site selectors are kind of like talent scouts. They go out and look for properties and investments and businesses for other companies, larger companies. And he was actually the site selector that found our Home Depot and our Lowe's site. And he said that the Matsu Borough is today what Orange County, California was in the 1950s. And I grew up in Southern California, and I'll elaborate more on what economic development looked like there. And for those of you who don't know, that's where the Matsu Borough is located, in that green spot there on the on that map.
And for the record, Representative Torres joined us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you probably know all too well from other presentations the problems that we have going on with our revenue and how dependent we are on oil and federal spending, and also the decline in the production of Alaska oil as well. And hopefully our new tax regime will turn that around. Also, the U.S. in general is getting ready to outproduce the Saudis in production, and the United States should be energy independent by 2020, but it also, we're in an environment of declining demand in the world, so that's going to push prices of oil down. And you've probably seen this slide from AOGA, California has overtaken Alaska in oil production now as well. So we're in a situation that is somewhat less than desirable. We also have other threats to Alaskan prosperity, and I want to focus on a couple of these. We know federal spending from last October, what the issues are there. The downward pressure on the value of the dollar throughout the world, there's many economies that are coming on strong, and their currency is becoming more valuable and in some people's minds getting ready to supplant the dollar as the main currency. The main danger that we face with the devaluation of the dollar is that if you have Alaska dollars and they're just sitting in a bank account uninvested and we haven't bought the parts for the infrastructure that we need to build out here, if we keep waiting, eventually we will be trying to purchase those parts with diminished value dollars, and we'll pay a lot more for them. And so it's important that we get our dollars invested in hard assets as quickly as possible. The Chinese already understand that. They're doing it with great vigor right now because they don't want to be caught holding dollars when things turn around. Also, with the sunsetting on qualitative easing by the federal government, interest rates are going to rise, and there's no way around it. And as they've been pumping up the debt markets with buying from the Fed at a rate of $85 billion a month, and that's now coming to an end, and that bubble in those markets is going to deflate, and that's going to cause interest rates to go up.
Representative Higgins has a question.
Well, first, thank you for your comment. You know, your comment is, from what I understand, you don't have a lot of confidence in our economy, and you want to take our dollars and make them into hard assets, which I totally agree. And so my question, though, is this. When do you think that is in the field of play? I mean, because right now that's the hard question that we're asking people, you know, because a lot of people don't quite believe that. I mean, in your opinion, are we looking at 10 years or should we do it in a five-year span? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, the end of quantitative easing is being scheduled now. And so we're going to go into a higher interest rate environment. And as far as the dollar being devalued, if it hadn't been for the other developing economies and Europe having its debt crisis, if they hadn't weakened in the last couple of years, we would already be in a situation where the dollar would be devalued. That was it was already happening back around 2010, 2011, when they were actually talking about re-denominating oil prices in euros. And lucky for the U.S., the European debt crisis happened, and they didn't end up making that move. But the move is afoot, and you can actually go. There's a couple slides out of another presentation that I'll show you, and you can actually go to that company and watch their presentation on what they call the rise of the redback or the rise of the renminbi, which is the Chinese currency.
Thank you.
So I'll skip the rest of this because I think you mostly know about a lot of those points, and I'll move on. But the point is that we need to unite here in Alaska and diversify our economy away from oil and into other sectors. So our number one opportunity that we have as in Alaska is that there are customers out there that love us, and they want what Alaska has.
What I see is the beginnings of a great infrastructure for Alaska. We have the entire Tanana Valley in transition. It's stuck between that, which is an oil and petroleum economy that's waning, We have them also working very hard to hold that which is a government and defense-oriented economy that's waning. They're looking for new ways to grow an economy, but they've got to lower their cost of living. And they've also got to have a way to export their production and goods. The dominoes could fall just right to where this port helps springboard them towards that growth and new direction they seek.
So that was Greg Galick with the World Trade Center this last summer out at Port McKenzie. And the World Trade Center has been very helpful in helping us make contact with a lot of customers and potential investors overseas. Just a few things about the Alaska economic model that we need to change. I always hear this these words, economy of scale, and Alaska doesn't have a large enough economy of scale. And so what we have to do is let go of the Alaska as the consumer model and move to a different model and with a whole different scale. We have 726,000 customers here in Alaska, and it's just too small for many industries. And Alaska needs to think more like a country. And if we focus on Asia as the customer, we have access to 4.2 billion customers. There will be 350 million Asians born in the next 5 years. So that's about their growth rate. We have, if Alaska will focus on just making goods or food products for 50 million Asian customers, and we set 2% aside for Alaskans, we'll have the we'll have security for a million Alaskans here. So there's a big opportunity. Now there's a company called Aberdeen Asset Management, and I'll show you how to get to this presentation on the web, but it's Asia by the numbers. And again, there's 4.2 billion people in Asia, and you can see by those bubbles there on that map where the concentrations of that population are, with 1.3 billion being in China and 1.2 billion in India alone.
Now, this is just to interrupt for a second. Representative Pruitt has joined us for the record.
Now this map, what this illustrates, and I'm going to try and use the pointer here, you'll notice it shows 2009, 2020, and 2030, and there's rings around each one of these areas here, and every one of those rings corresponds to those colors of those decades. And you can see that in North America and in Europe, the middle class, what this illustrates is the growth of the middle class, and there will be very little growth in the middle class in North America and in Europe. And by the way, the middle class is defined as between $10 and $100 a day of spendable income, of disposable income. There will be moderate growth in the in South America and in Africa, but in developing Asia, in 2009, they had a half a billion people in the middle class. In 2020, they'll have 1.7 billion people in the middle class. And then in 2030, they'll have 3.2 billion people in the middle class. And what this is doing is it's driving consumerism. It's driving people online, and they're seeing what the rest of the world has, and they want to raise their lifestyle and have what the rest of the world has. And they're in China. They have a government program to urbanize their population. They're moving people from the rural areas into the cities. And over the next 10 years, they'll be moving 400 million people into urban areas from rural areas. So it's this growing middle class is our biggest customer. They all need food. They all need everything that we can produce here in Alaska. Economic growth in emerging Asia is 6.7%. China is 7.8%. India is 4.9%. The U.S. at 2.7%, and in the Eurozone, they're in a negative. They're in a decline as far as economic growth. So you can. This is a 31-minute presentation, but it's well worth going on the internet and listening to. It's called The Merits of Investing in Asia. If you'll just Google that, you'll find it. This is from the World Trade Center. Alaska's total exports are a little short of $5 billion this last year. This is the most recent slide that I have, and you can see China up there at $1.3 billion. They are our number one trading partner, followed by Japan and then South Korea.
Madam Chair.
I'm Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that slide, so this is our total overseas exports. Is it natural resource exports or seafood? What makes up the bulk of that?
Actually, seafood is number one.
Okay.
And natural resources, number two, mostly metals.
Okay. And so right now we're not exporting any consumer goods, right? None of our food products, anything like that.
As far as value-added food products, very little value-added forestry products. There's some.
Okay.
And so there are some things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things I want to address in this presentation is mm-hmm. growing that value-added sector.
I think there's some conversation going around right now with the natural gas line proposal. We have a low-cost, long-term fuel source, and do we have manufacturing opportunities? And, you know, would these be markets where we would be in a good location to service them?
That's exactly where I'm going with the last third of this presentation.
All right.
So, yeah, you're right on point.
Right.
So that's terrific. I'm glad you have that vision. Again, this is the rise in trade that China has done over the last little over a decade with us. So the message here is that we can invest in abundance. Asian consumers are going to drive the future economy of this world. There's no way around that. We're just outnumbered. Asia wants what Alaska has. Alaska has massive capacity to produce for these Asian customers, and they have the money to buy it. So we have a chance to engage these consumers and these markets coming in 2015 in the fall. And this fall, it'll be in Fort Worth, Texas. It's the International Economic Development Council's annual conference that they have. But in 2015, AEDC won the bid for doing this conference, and we in Anchorage, and we should have about 1,300 IEDC members and about 300 site selectors. This is very exciting. This is like having in the economic development world. This is like having the Olympics in your city. So. And the MATSU, I'm on the committee for bringing and setting up this whole event with AEDC. The MATSU Borough is a member of AEDC, and we're very engaged with this. And this year we'll be helping to do a lot of marketing for the MATSU and Anchorage among the AEDC members. This is our time window. We have 20 months to get prepared for this. And so this is a good conference for all of Alaska, because it will really put Alaska on the map and expose what we have. The plan is that at the 2014 conference in Fort Worth, we'll have native dancers there. We'll have all Alaska seafood, and we're going to do it bigger and better than any other conference has ever been done in the past. And so it's really going to be something special. We have tour operators that are planning in 2015 to stay open an extra 2 weeks, and people are already lining up around this to take on these visitors and make it good for their businesses and make it good for the future.
Don, Anchorage Economic Development Corporation is hosting it, but are we getting broad statewide participation?
Yes.
From communities all over Alaska.
And we're going to have site selector tours that will go everywhere from southeast all the way up to Nome and that area and up to Prudhoe Bay and all that. We'll have tours ahead of it and after the conference.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. In the MATSU, we're also sponsoring the same boot camps that have been put on in Anchorage for a couple of years. These are the international trade boot camps put on by the World Trade Center. So we're getting people ready for this opportunity. So right now, we have the convergence of four important economic drivers in the Mat-Su borough and coming in right at the Point McKinsey area. And that's Port McKinsey, the Port McKinsey Rail Extension, the Kinnickarm Bridge, and the ASAP Pipeline Project. So this is a map of the Port McKinsey area, and you can see right there in that red circle there, that is Port McKinsey. And we have the largest port area of any port in the state. It's 14 square miles. We have all kinds of staging area and lease lots available for large projects to be done. We're straight across from the Port of Anchorage, and also I'll show you a little later where the Kinnickarm Bridge is supposed to come across. That's our port as it is right now after the Phase 2 dock expansion was done. Our dock is large enough and deep enough to take the Super Panamax vessels. They're the largest vessels in the world. That vessel right there is a coal ship that we did a load on from Usabelli. It was already partially full, and just to make due proof of concept, we topped it off at Port McKinsey. Port McKinsey is self-scouring. That means you don't have to dredge it. We don't spend a penny on dredging at Port McKinsey. That's, by the way, the largest ship ever that came into that's come into Upper Cook Inlet.
Out of curiosity, could that ship have gone into the Port of Anchorage?
No, it could not. Port of Anchorage is too shallow.
Thank you.
And we have, at the lowest low tide of the year, we have 65 feet of draft left. Was there a question?
Oh, Representative Tarr, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along that line, if the port project at the Port of Anchorage is completed, would that change that, or will the Port McKenzie still be, you know, the only place where a ship like that could have gone?
Through the chair, yes. The Port of Anchorage will always have a sedimentation issue there because of the dynamics of the way that Kinnickarm's waters flow.
Okay. Thank you.
But we should make the point that we anticipate that the Port of Anchorage is always going to be primarily a goods intake for the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
We're gearing up to primarily be a bulk export point.
Yep. I'm glad that...
Thank you for that clarification, Mayor. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, I wanted to just highlight that. I mean, we don't want to compare the two. They're apples to oranges. I think they're complementary to each other. They do not work against each other. So I think that's where they're going, but I think it's important to stress that.
Yes, very, very important, and I was going to take us there, too, because that was my understanding. Thank
yes,
you.
Most definitely we are not a competitor. We are complementary, and our market segment focus is completely different than Anchorage.
Right.
And this is a video showing some of the activity that's going on at Port McKinsey.
We sent
4,000 tons of scrap metal to South Korea. Right there at the end. And, Madam Chair, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip through most of the videos so we can give you the meat of the presentation. So, again, we have... And did you say that you needed to go at 12 o'clock?
12:30.
Okay. So we have the ability to bring in large project cargo, for supporting all kinds of projects throughout Alaska. We have again more, for the large projects that you have on the board. We have already done bulk imports. Those logs went to Valley Sawmill to support our lumber businesses here in the Port McKenzie area. Those bags on the back of that truck is cement that was brought in, and it significantly lowered the price of cement here in Alaska when we were doing that. We have big lease lots. That's the big advantage to Port McKenzie, is you don't really have any space constraints. Phase 3 is in permitting right now. That's the blue shaded area on that diagram, and we will add a lot more capacity and abilities to our port with that. So the Port McKenzie rail extension, this is a critical link that will link the main rail line to Tidewater at Port McKenzie so that we can bring goods in and commodities out. We have gone through all the permitting processes, knocked down 6 legal challenges. We have one, actually it's the Corps of Engineers have one legal challenge left. But in that legal challenge that's been done, we've knocked down 2 work injunctions. And hopefully this will be cleared up by this year sometime. The goal is to get the project finished and able to run trains on it by fall of 2016. And I'm going to show you one video here. That's our rail loop bed that was created, finished this summer. And we've moved a lot of dirt.
Six million yards.
6 million yards of dirt. And if anyone tells you that we diked off all the salmon streams or other things, don't believe it. There's 141, I believe, bridges and culverts that go through, and we've accommodated trails. We made a lot of firewood people happy, as you just saw. We had a moratorium. How long was it, Mayor, for forest products that we didn't harvest? And now we just turned it back on this year. It was eight years or something.
Yeah, you couldn't cut any trees in the barrier.
And so now tree cutting is going back on. That's the interchange up by Houston right next to Parks Highway. And I'll just fast forward through this part. We're already laying rail, and this was just taken a few days ago. We're already laying rail up by Houston because that's where the logistics yard is going to go for the northern end of the project. And so we're laying the rail there because a lot of the pieces will be delivered, of course, by rail. Project funding. Thank you for the legislature being so generous through these other years. And then this year we're asking for $60 million, and then $40 million or $41 million the next year in 2016. And with that, we will be able to get this project finished and start goods flowing. And it will actually put Port McKenzie in position to import the pipe for the ASAP pipeline project, which they have already ordered. So it's those orders went in to their suppliers about a month ago, and so we want to be in position to be the import point for that. We this project has broad support throughout Alaska, from one end to the other, because these companies and these municipalities understand the importance of getting goods flowing from the interior.
What you've already got built here and the plans that you have for the future, it's really, really impressive. And it's going to open the doors for natural resource exports from around the state, markets all over the world.
It's very exciting, and
so the interior resources that we have, we have over 1,000 occurrences of minerals along the rail belt that have been identified here in Alaska and inventoried. Again, the imports are things like pipes and girders and cement and heavy equipment, all the things that you need for building out these big projects that we have. And there's the Roads to Resources project for building out the western side of the state, the Susitna Dam project, and of course our gas pipeline projects. We have a study that was done in 2008 that shows that on the gas pipeline projects, this is done by Northern Economics, that we can avoid costs of $122 to $176 million on that project if Port McKenzie will be used as the import point and the rail extension is used to transport those goods for that project. I'll have that online in the next couple of days at my on my website.
I was just going to say, you should have had that slide right after the one that showed how much you were requesting of the legislature.
We've got a little more that could go with this, too.
Honestly, I moved that slide around a whole bunch, and I thought having the punch at the end was the best way to go on that. And then, of course, once the interior is built out, then the exports can start, and the extraction tax flow can start. Again, we have the only 100-car rail loop. It makes it very quick and easy compared to other ports to unload and load things. They can literally turn around, if they were doing a coal train from Healy, they can load it, come down, unload it, and be back to Healy all on the same day. And again, there's a picture of the loop area. These are some of the companies that either have made commitments or are in the process of making commitments, and we have many more that are working with the Alaska Railroad and other agencies that are under NDAs that are very interested in Port McKenzie. The World Trade Center, Alaska Railroad, and the Matsuboro, we've been working as an alliance to go out and market the port and the opportunities up and down the rail line. Kinnickarm Bridge, and as controversial as it may be, we think it's a boon to economic development for the whole state. The benefits to Anchorage right now is that the Matsu provides, according to Neil Fried, 20,000, a little under 21,000 people a day to Anchorage. And the way we came to got this data was they compared the workman's comp database with the PFD database and compared who's living where and who's working where. And they have a spreadsheet for the whole, he sent me the whole spreadsheet for the whole state. And I can tell you there's only about 1,300 commuters that commute from Anchorage to the Matsu every day. For work. But this is only W-2 workers. This is not business owners. This is not contractors. It's not other people that wouldn't be on a W-2. So the point is getting workers to Anchorage efficiently every day is very important for Anchorage's sake. And if the bridge is out for some reason there at the Kinnick River, over by Eagle River, or if there's a big stoppage in traffic there, people need an alternative. The part of the
allow me to interrupt for a minute. Representative Tarr has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we just go back one more, please? So the circles at the bottom remind me.
That mustard-colored circle right there, that's where the Kincarn Bridge would be.
Okay.
And the red is the port?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
The as far as Anchorage employees or workforce that comes to the MATSU, we have a lot of people commuting to the Goose Creek Correctional Facility. And I would bet that some of the residents who live out there have noticed an uptick in traffic on the Kinnick Goose Bay Road. The Port McKenzie area, as we turn on industries out there at the port and with the rail line, easily we've identified 5,000 jobs and a lot more as industry builds up. There's pictures of or conceptual drawings of where the Kincarn Bridge would go. And you can see on that satellite type photo, there's Port McKenzie right there, and the Kincarn Bridge would have an abutment that would go right up just north of that, around Lake Lorain. And the MATSU Borough has already sold that property to Kubota. When the Kincarn Bridge is available, it will make consumer access to Anchorage much easier from the MATSU. It's 30 miles closer to Kinnick Fairview than it is to go to Anchorage the other direction. And that's 16,300 people that live in Kinnick Fairview, and I'm not counting all the people that live in Big Lake and Houston and Willow and all that whole western side of the MATSU Valley. Those would be added to that total number.
And that is our fastest growing point in the borough. If they were to incorporate, they'd be the fifth largest city in the state, right behind Wasilla.
So the 16,300 are the number of people right now on the Kinnick Fairview stretch. Wow.
Wow. Yep. And then also, the mayor is going to be talking here shortly about the Alsop town site, and that would be another 5,000 residents, and that would be added to that, and they would be very likely to go to Anchorage to do their business, because that's going to be the closest place. Tell you what, for time, have you seen this video before? Okay. That's what it'll look like. That's from our friends at Kubota. So then the next project is right up there in the top, the blue line, and that's the AGDC ASAP gas pipeline project. And it actually terminates right where the Fairbanks natural gas processing plant is, LNG plant is. That's where Fairbanks loads its trucks to take them north to give Fairbanks, Alaska, their natural gas supply. And that's fed, and I'll point out a little later if we have time, there's another pipeline that comes from Beluga, and then there's another pipeline that takes off this way and goes and feeds the natural gas to the Mat-Su and to Anchorage, and will also be the gas supply for the MEA power plant. The ASAP pipeline goes from the North Slope, right at the, you know, at the Arctic Ocean, all the way down to the Mat-Su, and again terminates at Fairbanks Natural Gas, just 12 miles north of Point McKenzie. Sorry about that. There is a lot of interest in LNG, and unfortunately, on the screen up there, it's not showing all that well in red. But you may be aware of the company, the Japanese company called REI Resource Energy Incorporated, and they have entered into some agreements with AGDC, and they are looking at Port McKenzie as well as Kenai for building an LNG facility. And this is a press release that came out on the 12th of this month. So again, the transportation issue, with Port McKenzie, we can do the imports for building the pipeline. We can, the Port McKenzie rail extension, we can transport it north. Apologize. And then the Kinnickarm Bridge can supply the workforce for working in working on this project, and also all the industries that will come from having that natural gas at Port McKenzie. So I hope I'm kind of painting the picture for you at this point, how all these components, when they're in place, the value of all of them together is much higher than just the sum of the four together. You see what I'm saying? You can really, you really have something to create, and it's like Representative Tarr pointed out. If we have natural gas, then we have the low cost energy. We can also create the low cost electricity, and we can it really will move the whole thing along. The other, you know, the other thing that blocks Alaska's ability to have industries is long supply chains. Well, because when we make this link, these transportation links both by rail and by bridge, it'll collapse those supply chains. And since we'll have the low-cost energy, we'll be able to have a whole economy encapsulated inside of 400 miles, if you count Fairbanks, and most of it right there, just within 100 miles, in the Port McKenzie, Anchorage, Mat-Su area. So there's still more, and I want to have time to address the value-added proposition, but I'll just flip through these real fast. The next one would be the Goose Creek Correctional Facility. That's 1,500 inmates and 371 jobs. We have the Alsop town site, which the mayor wants to talk about.
Yeah, that is adjacent to the port property, also borough-owned, but we've carved out a plot of land that is roughly the size of Palmer, 5 square miles, and the plan is next summer to start selling to developers the first 900 acres of that, and that will then become needed infrastructure for workers and the growth out there.
Mayor, the name Alsop, can you just tell us where that came from?
That's the name of the road that goes off of the Point McKenzie Road at the Goose Creek Correctional Facility. Alsop, I think, was one of the early homesteaders out there.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know, do we have an official name for it yet, or is that just our informal name for the moment?
We're open for suggestions.
We can have a contest. Representative Pruitt.
So just a quick question. So I haven't had the chance to go out there, so I apologize for not being a little bit better informed, but I see it's right beside the prison there. Is there, you know, normally when you think prison, you're like, I don't want to live next to a prison. So why this area, and how does the prison and this coexist together and create the you know, what looks like from this kind of neat little drawing that you have, a nice looking community? How do you see them kind of working together?
Well, I think they intend to keep the prisoners in the prison.
Yeah, well.
And through the chair. But as we develop our transportation infrastructure around here, we don't intend for the prison to be the primary entrance into this community.
Okay.
Eventually, that's one of the first things the developers ask for.
Okay. So I'm not crazy here. The developers are talking.
That's right.
The same.
Yeah, and we're not doing this all on paper. We're sitting down with the developers as we go. Yeah. And it also would like to point out at the very bottom of that, we have the potential for another what's your float plane?
Float plane. Oh, Lake Hood.
Yeah, equivalent to Lake Hood. Two lakes that are going to be
right
connected.
There.
And for a seaplane base, that's something we need out there badly, is another seaplane base.
Sure. Representative Gaddis.
Madam Chair, I would like to maybe respond to Representative Pruitt. I was on the Citizens Advisory Group when we talked about and looked at having a prison out there. I live out there for about 5 or 6 months out of the year, so certainly it was a personal concern as well. Having looked at a lot of our prisons, not only in the state of Alaska, but throughout the nation, they become the anchors, if you will, for future growth. And when we looked at Point McKenzie, we saw that anchor as a future growth builder. We look at Highland, for instance. I mean, it's right off the road, and it really hasn't had the impact that I think that originally a lot of people thought that it would have. And looking at the stats, even nationwide, I think prisons, you know, certainly there's a certain look to them that they don't look like residential homes, but I think for the most part, the folks out there saw it as a plus and as a neighbor, if you will. So we've had good relationships with the correctional farm out there, too, so it just kind of was the next progression. So there really hasn't been a lot of negative or downsides in regards to that. Probably an upside, if you will. We now have a new big neighbor.
Thank you for that. Continue. Oh, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to understand, right now, so it's this original person's homestead that then is going to be developed into all these different multi-use areas as described on the map there. And is this going to be part of... I guess it'd be part of the Mat-Su borough, and so it wouldn't incorporate as another small town or anything. I guess I wanted to understand how that would all work.
Through the chair, I don't have answers to all these questions yet. We do anticipate this becoming an incorporated town on its own right, but this is not anybody's homestead. This is 5 square miles that belong to the borough.
Oh.
But on the side, you've got Greg Bell's homestead. You've got Governor Sheffield's got a homestead out there. There's a number of old homesteads, and they used to take tractors across the Goose Creek. We call it a swamp. There's a better name for it.
Wetland.
It's the game refuge. But, of course, we've got a road around that now. But in the old days, that was all Caterpillar access across that game refuge. And there is private land around there, but we're doing all this on public land, so we're not stepping on anybody's toes.
Representative Pruitt.
You mentioned earlier you're going to be selling these to developers. What about people that are looking to move out there? I mean, I see this as kind of a nice little boon for, you know, of course, you guys, but I think there's going to be a lot of interest as a bridge eventually goes in and now people have access to it. Maybe people are going to want to do their own ideas. Hey, I want to build something. You know, I want to. Is that going to be an opportunity as well, the developers and individuals to be a part of this?
Yeah, through the chair, absolutely. There is a lot of privately owned land out there. And when you go, the Kubota project ends right where Point McKenzie Road heads off to connect Goose Bay Road. But there's been people speculating and buying land on Burma Road, which is just another few hundred yards down the road. You're going to see all that blossom. But we didn't want to see it turning into a strip mall, and that's one reason we're creating this town site magnet for the higher density development. And then there's plenty of private land that you'll see being developed around there. In fact, one of our build-out studies found another intersection up there that I believe is on native land that's probably going to be a major commercial development.
Since we were earlier talking about rail and now we're talking about people and thinking about people building homes and things, has there been any consideration that there might be passenger rail service from the town site up to Fairbanks, or would people still need to go into Anchorage to go up the other way?
Well, Madam Chair, we're actually right now working with the railroad to initiate transit service on the rail from Wasilla to Anchorage. So when that link is finished, that certainly is an option down to the port.
Okay, thank you.
So the one point to the big point to the town site is it would create housing for the prison workers. There's also several investors who have plans to use this land right across the Point McKenzie Road for some other purposes that would be synergistic with the prison and also the wastewater treatment plant that's going in across there.
That have to do with tomatoes?
It does. That's the Howling Tomato Project, and some of you know about that. I'd love to go in depth with that with anyone who doesn't, but that's an exciting project.
And I failed to point out that one of the advantages of this town site is that it already has water and sewer infrastructure ready to build out.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
If you haven't had the opportunity to go and tour the wastewater treatment plant there, that's a real treat. It's state-of-the-art, and it's just amazing and very, very neat to see what they've done. Again, I mentioned Fairbanks Natural Gas, the line from Beluga, that's located out here at Point McKenzie, that's how Fairbanks gets its natural gas. Then we have the takeoff line from that goes over and circles around Kinnick Arm. It supplies the natural gas to the Matsu and part of the natural gas to Anchorage, and will be the supplier of gas to the new MEA power plant when it starts working. Central Alaska Energy, and they were in the news lately here. They will be building a tank farm, 6.9 million gallon tank farm there at Port McKenzie to supply low-cost fuel to the interior. And again, this was... sorry, I pushed the wrong button.
Where is it on the map, though? Can you go back and show
us
where that, which circle? Or?
It is on the rail loop itself, and it's on the, if you were looking at the rail loop as a like a clock, it would be at the 2 o'clock position on the rail loop there.
Okay.
And this project is being funded by ADA, and it was a loan from ADA, not a grant or a gift. And so something that they will pay back. And then Chugach Electric.
You know, we should probably mention that this is for importing low sulfur fuel, which Flint Hills was not producing, just to, because it's been floating around that this was somehow competing with Flint Hills, but don't see any connection there.
Thank you.
And then we have Chugach Electric. These thinner lines here are supplying electricity to the area from a power plant out by Beluga. And then eventually there's going to be a large intertie project that will go from Homer a hydro project down in Homer all the way up to the main intertide line going up to Fairbanks, and it will supply power throughout the area, and it'll go right through Point McKenzie. So, and then, if you haven't heard about it, a lot of people haven't heard about it yet, but there is the Arctic Fiber project being done by Quintillion and now being partly funded by Futeris. And this is a project that will take fiber optic cable from Tokyo over the through the Arctic and all the way over to Europe. And this is an important project because it will bring state-of-the-art fiber to Alaska. It will have several takeoff points that you can see around the northern coast of Alaska. And I won't alliterate all of these points, but just to say that without good internet and competitive speed internet, any economy is hampered and or handicapped, and this will bring good internet and competitive world-class internet to us.
I must miss something. How does the Port McKenzie area relate to this Arctic fiber project?
That piece of fiber will go right through the Matsu, and as it goes down to Anchorage, it'll go right through the Port McKenzie area.
Okay, thank you.
We have companies that have located already at Port McKenzie. A couple of ones that I'll highlight is Westpac Logistics. They do freight forwarding. They were formerly known as Pac Arctic. And then we have Aluctic Manufacturing. They create manufactured homes in a factory that they have right there at Port McKenzie. They load them on barges, and some of them they truck, but we've done barge loads of these houses to take up to the North Slope and other places.
And by the way, this has been going on for well over 10 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not something new.
Right. So, and then this is the agricultural area, and you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, this is getting close to home for Representative Gaddis. This is 15,000 acres that the state set aside back in the 80s. And, you know, a lot of those efforts have been ballyhooed. But this land is mostly in production. And I can testify that as of last week, the only hay reserves in the state for everybody's horses or cattle is out there at Point McKenzie. And the Delta growers are out of hay. They're paying $200 a bale for straw to get their cattle through the winter. So this is a project that is already booming and is going to be that much closer to markets.
And one of the important projects that we have available to us to do out here is to create a processing center for agricultural goods throughout Alaska to process them right here in the Port McKenzie area and then load them on ships to be sent out to other markets and especially Asian markets. Or if we have the Kinnickarn Bridge, we can get those products to aircraft at the airport and efficiently over to Asia. So now I'm going to talk quickly about value-added industries and kind of paint the picture and loosely quantify what it can do for us. So we have all these products in the interior that we can produce. They're ore-type products. And I'm going to pick copper just for this example. And I'm going to use let's just talk about copper ore. It's about 0.5% to 1% pure, and the place where we get the value to the state of Alaska is when it's extracted in extraction taxes. Then your mining company here in Alaska, this is what they do with other ores, is they run it through a concentration process that makes it the what they call concentrates into about 15% to 35% pure, And the value that comes from that is the transportation and mining payrolls, and it makes the product, that big pile of stuff there, worth about $950 per metric ton. So it goes from being essentially dirt to $950 a ton dirt. And then we transport it to the port, and we make that creates tariffs for the railroad, and tariffs for the port. And then we load it onto ships, and we send it off to some other place that's going to smelt it and make it into goods. And that's the model that we've been looking at here in Alaska, is taking our concentrates and sending them overseas. My son works over here at Greens Creek on Admiralty Island, just a few miles away. Every 2 weeks, they send a barge of concentrates to China every 2 weeks from there. The issue is that most of that value in that in those concentrates leaves the Alaska, and it drives another economy. So how do we capture the rest of that value? And I'm going to use an example of that little device right there. It's called a choke. It works like a transformer, and it's a semiconductor. And if you take it from the concentrate point to making a choke, it increases the value of that copper by 800,000%. Now that sounds like a huge, almost ridiculously huge number, but I'll show you how it works. See, Alaska's manufacturing industry deal breakers are, number one, our distance from our materials, number two, our distance from our markets, number three, high energy costs, and number four, a weak workforce. And we have a weak workforce because most of our best and brightest get out of high school, they go to college somewhere else because they don't think it's going to happen for them here in Alaska, and they take off, and many of them never come back. So we need to find a way to retain them, and that's those people, and that's by having industries for them. Well, with natural gas coming into the picture and transportation links coming into the picture, we can collapse the supply chains and also cut the cost of energy so that we can be competitive on a world scale here. So we turn it from deal breakers to deal makers, and again, it's all within 400 miles, our entire supply chain, and even shorter than that when you consider where the actual work is done, just in the Mat-Su and Anchorage. Then we also have the ability to retain our youth. We have, we are 30% closer to the Asian markets than the West Coast of the United States is, which creates a big backhaul opportunity. Most people don't know it, but there's 2,400 cargo aircraft per month that land and refuel at Anchorage International Airport and fly back to Asia mostly empty. And that's how our peony growers are getting such a great price and great market for their flowers, is because they're essentially going back to Asia at half price on these backhaul runs. Also, we have 4,000 ships a year that transit through the Aleutians, and they come within 170 miles of Cook Inlet.
Is that the Aleutian chain?
That's the Aleutian chain right there.
Okay, thanks for telling us.
Sorry. But again, we're 30% closer than Los Angeles. So let's say we take a different route. We don't take the concentrates out at the port, but we actually put them into a smelter that's here in Alaska. What happens when we take that step in the process, when we actually smelt it here in Alaska, we create these large ingots that are about a meter by meter in dimensions, and that's 99% pure copper. And it raises the value from $950 to $3,500 per metric ton. That creates jobs. That creates industry. That creates taxable infrastructure. That's all to have those smelting processes going. To build that, it's it will create all of that for Alaska. The next step is refining the copper, and that's done by taking those large ingots and putting them in these big tanks that are filled with copper sulfate, and in between there's a they also hang a sheet of copper foil, and then by electrolytic process it transfers from one to the other, and all of the impurities drop to the bottom of the tank, and you end up with 99.999% pure copper, and that makes adds the value to about $6,500 per metric ton. Again, more industry, more taxable infrastructure. Then let's say we create wire here in Alaska, and we have wire. If we had wire factories, just looking at the wire that would be used in that choke, which I documented in the bottom of that, it would raise the value per metric ton of that copper commodity to $40,000 per metric ton. So we went from $950 to $40,000 per metric ton by taking these three steps. And again, it creates jobs, it creates industry. And then if we can order the cores of these chokes from China if we wanted to, or we could produce them here with iron. And when we add them with the copper, it's a very simple tool. You just wind the copper wire around the donut, and there's a calculation you can do to get the result that you want. But these generally sell for about 16 cents a piece, and with a metric ton of copper wire, that gives you enough copper wire to produce about $8.5 million worth of these chokes. And you think to yourself, wow, who could use $8.5 million worth of these chokes per year? But when you think of Asia with 4.2 billion people, and you think every electronic device has some form of that device in it, whether it's your cell phone or your clock radio or your television set, you can crack open any of them and find these. This is an easy-to-do industry. And I know, because I worked in that industry. I worked in a factory that made these right when I got out of high school. I was hired to be a quality control technician inspecting these, and we had a big production floor of about 300 people that sat there and wound these chokes by hand. This was back in 1979, and I can tell you that this is an industry that works. And this is just one of the examples. And then, of course, the next step is actually putting the chokes onto the printed circuit boards and building, really adding value to it at that point.
So was the 800,000% at the point where we made the semiconductor? We went from a pile of dirt, basically, to a semiconductor.
That's right. And then taking it to the next step would be making it actually into the televisions and the devices. But these are all the steps that it goes through, and that 800,000% was the total jump from there to there in value. But each step, you can see the jump in value of that commodity that we thought was just copper that we could ship offshore, but if we keep it onshore and do something with it, we create jobs, we change lives, and make a great industry, a high-tech industry in semiconductors. So, again, there are many, many products made out of copper, and that's just one commodity. And you've probably seen the charts of all the things that are produced, all the minerals can be produced here in Alaska, but this is just one example. Fire Island, there's 3,000 pounds of copper in every one of those windmills. There's that roll of cable that Port McKenzie brought in to bring that power across the inlet from Fire Island. That's 218 tons, and at least 60% of that weight is going to be copper. So we can have a whole industry, and I see that we're out of time. Again, agriculture is a great example, but for value-added products. But I hope I've just planted the seed today of what we can do and how Port McKinsey and the Port McKinsey Enterprise Zone can be so critical to creating wealth and prosperity here in Alaska.
Well, thank you. Do any members have any questions or comments before we close? It was an excellent eye-opener, and thank you for helping us all understand how the Port McKinsey area ties into the economic health of our entire state. And really, your optimism is contagious. Thank you very much. I look forward to the day where we see some of these things actually bear fruit. So thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming to Juneau and doing the presentation. And I just have a couple announcements before we close. No meeting on Thursday, but I started getting a little bit interested in the whole airship concept, and we've been in touch with the Senate and House Transportation Committees, as well as the Energy Committees, because the airship industry actually got started as a result of building energy plants in remote areas where there was no road access. So we are working on a meeting, so it will be we will be joining on both the 3rd and 4th. We'll have opportunities, so that gives you a chance to learn about the airship industry. So one of those days is with energy, and one of those days is with transportation joint House and Senate meetings. Also, not exactly related to this, but I'll just take the opportunity, as Chair, to mention that we are working to have a lunchtime event on March 5th having to do with earthquake preparedness for us in this building, and that's in conjunction with the anniversary of the earthquake here in Alaska. So stay tuned for that opportunity. And with that, at 12:30 on the button, adjourn.
Thank you very much.